Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Fridays, all about food and fun here at WAMC. We have food, we have fun, we have folks in the studio who are the life of the party, quite literally. They provide the delicious eats and drinks that make your catered affairs a hit. What should you look for in a caterer? What are some of the trends for the new year? What kind of food and drink should you choose? How do you present it? Oh, we have answers. Do you have questions? The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Kim Klopstock is the owner of Lily and the Rose and 50 South, a farm-to-table gourmet catering service and restaurant in Saratoga Springs, New York. She specializes in organic cooking. Bruce Kazan is the executive chef and owner of Main Course Catering and Market in New Paltz, New York. He has been dubbed Best Caterer by Hudson Valley Magazine for 22 years. Dominic Pernomo is the co-owner of Yono's Restaurant and DP and American Brasserie here in Albany. He's one of just four certified sommeliers in New York State, having been inducted as the youngest member in history into Chaîne des Rôtisseurs. In other words, he knows wine better than anyone around here. And I don't know too much about wine, so maybe I'll learn something here today. Kim, Bruce, Dominic, welcome to Food Friday. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
We have some delicious food here, and we'll talk about that in a moment. The number to call with your questions, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. And from there, you can launch over to our Food Friday page, which is pretty cool. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. Any of those ways, our trusty producers will whisk your questions and comments into the studio at some point, or you could call 800-348-2551. And before we begin, panel, some props here to Kim Klopstock. Kim, you have catered a couple of times at the WAMC Fund Drive, and I believe it was a year ago. I think it was winter. It was a bleak, terrible day, very cold and wet, and late afternoon, all of a sudden, these people come in with tablecloths and china and tremendous food, and we said, well, who the heck is this? And you know, we eat like animals many times during, especially late in a fund drive, day seven or day eight, you're reduced to an animal-like behavior. and it was Lily and the Rose, and it's still something I remember after all these fund drives. So well done.
Thank you.
And are you going to do it again?
Yeah, of course.
Well, good. Oh, excellent.
I think either the 4th or the 5th of February.
Fantastic. Well, it's well worth the price of admission. Bruce, you handed me an interesting card here, and we'll start with that for today's program. Catering trends for 2014. Isn't it the same every year?
No, every single year there's new ideas on the horizons, and brides are stretching the envelope of finding new ways that they can turn their guests on and themselves.
Okay, well, give us some.
Well, you know, every year we try to discover, okay, what was last year's trends and what people don't ever want to see again. I think we're done or starting to see the end of the cupcake era. But, you know,
not in my house.
No, but as a general trend, you know, every year we all search for ways that we can turn our clients on. And, you know, there are experts out there that have their ideas on how things should be presented or what colors are going to be the latest colors. And this year we're seeing, well, other than white being the mainstay, Radiant Orchid was the color that I was researching that has hints of fuchsia and different kinds of pink overtones to them as the color trends.
And how important is color?
You know, it depends on how far you want to go with your event. There are some clients that, you know, it's a production, and how you do your styling in terms of, like, right now doing classic or antique china is really, really big. So how you pair that with the right linens and the right glassware. So when you look at the table, it all seems to make sense. Mm. I think that's the big part, is that coordination and decor are becoming as important as the food in terms of how you're putting together weddings now. And I think even with corporations who are trying to show that they have a sense of style to their ways, they're reaching it.
Okay. Well, I would think the food is the thing, though, right?
Food for us is the thing. You know, we want to. That's what we do for a living. The other parts of it makes you a complete caterer. You know, when you go into the business, we all went to culinary schools and we have a dream of what we want to do for food, but then all of a sudden other aspects come into it. Most importantly, what is the style? What's the style of services? What's the look going to be? But for me, I focus on the food and I have my coworkers that focus on the other aspects of it, which I count on.
Kim, do you find that there are in this business, and you must know many who have come and gone in this business, that some just get it right with the food and cannot get the presentation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they don't last too long?
I don't know about how long they last, but I also think the quality of the food and from where they get their food speaks to how long they'll last. Because I do know some people that have poor quality food, poor quality service, and are still around. It's a price point issue for some people.
It's a price point issue, yeah. Absolutely. Well, on the list here, I see cocktails, and I see one of the trends is lots of unique infusions with teas and herbs. That doesn't sound like a cocktail to me.
You know, it's amazing what things you can do with drinks right now. Last year, we were using a lot of things with, like, say, jasmine or chamomile, where you're making these simple syrup infusions with them, and then you can add them to many different kinds of drinks. Sometimes we were actually doing Prosecco, and it was really kind of enhancing a normal sparkling beverage to now giving more floral tones to it, which if you're pairing it with certain kinds of foods is a lot of fun. Another aspect we did last year, which we thought was a lot of fun, was we were making cotton candy toppings where you do like a margarita, but we make a sponge sugar with lime and chili, and you put that on top of a drink. So when a client gets a drink like that, it's a really cool gimmick.
And you go into a coma almost immediately.
No, but it's like, yo, what's that foamy stuff on top of my beverage? And it just gives a little bit more of a twist. Yeah. Everybody wants to find what's the next best thing that they can kind of play with.
Well, we are joined by Bruce Kazan, who is executive chef and owner of Main Course Catering and Market in New Paltz, Kim Klopstock, the owner of Lily and the Rose and 50 South, and also Dominic Pernomo. And let's talk about wines for a minute. You own restaurants. Mm-hmm. As far as catering goes, do they just say, well, give us something mid-price that we can serve? Or do people really care about the wine when they go to a function like
that? Well, I think again...
Hold that microphone up just a little bit.
I think, the wine and the beverage plays, it's an accompanying role to the food. You know, no matter how beautiful the setting is and how wonderful the food is, especially, when stations and they go through all this work to put these beautiful displays up, and if you're pouring some $6, magnums of wine, that somebody picked up at, a BJ's or something like that, that kind of kills your
party. Not that we don't like BJ's.
Right? No,
the legal department informs me that's not what you mean at all.
Certainly.
But, price. It doesn't have to be expensive to be good, right?
Not at all. And, I mean, I always say if a $50 bottle of wine better taste darn good.
Yeah.
The hunt for me, and I think for anybody in our business, is to find that $10 bottle of wine that drinks like that $30 or $40 bottle of wine. That's what you're looking for, is the value. There's certainly value in a $50 bottle of wine if it's outstanding. But to find that, $20 bottle of wine that drinks like a $50 bottle of wine, that's what we're constantly looking for. There's certainly the big names of California winemaking that, people are into our everyday household vocabulary, which is great. But there's so many young up-and-coming producers that, don't have to, everything's in the bottle. They're not buying full-page ads and magazines, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And all their craft is going into that bottle.
So low overhead.
Low overhead. No, no full-page magazines and magazine ads and that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, how do you find them then? In other words, you must search the world over for good wine.
Taste. I'm fortunate to have...
Well, that's a terrible job. Jeez.
I said taste, not drink. So we have, I'm in this area. I have about 45 different companies that we work with that we purchase wine from. So there's a lot to choose from. This coming Monday, there's a tasting in New York, in Manhattan at the Waldorf, and it's all the current vintage of Bordeaux that are coming out. So there's 300 or 400 wines, and the importers want you to taste their wines because that's the only way you're going to buy them. Especially these days, the market is so competitive. Everybody's fighting for that same dollar.
Have the customers, have the consumers become better educated?
Absolutely. I think, we spoke about Kevin Zarelli earlier, who was the wine director at the Windows on the World, which was at the top of the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. He has started a wine school, and in his book, The Windows on the World Wine Book, is the top-selling wine book of all time.
Yeah.
He updates it every year, so it's always up to date. A lot of people have that. I run into people all the time at wine tastings and seminars that say, oh, I have this book. But people are interested. I think things like the Food Network and Top Chef and all of those things get people more interested in food and wine, and they see something and they want to go out and experience it for themselves.
What's the best selection someone like me who knows nothing of a wine could make at a restaurant and be safe?
So the first thing you always want to do is to take advantage of the staff. That's why they're there. You know, if there's a sommelier, speak to the sommelier. If there's maybe a head bartender or a head server, you know, because they know, you know, especially if there's a, you know, a restaurant that has 100 wines on their wine list, you know, maybe they've tasted 40 or 50 of them, if not all of them. So, you know, it helps let them help you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and be frank and upfront. Say, here's what I'm looking for. Here's a style of wine. I like a, you know, medium bodied, you know, fruit forward wine. I usually drink Swanson Merlot, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't have that, but they have these two or three wines that look for it. And also, you know, price point, you know, be upfront about that. Because somebody says, you know, I'd like a moderately priced bottle of wine. Well, somebody's moderate is $20. Somebody else's moderate is $60. So,
right.
You know, and you know, we never want to, you know, verge on money, but, you know, certainly we don't want any surprises at the end, you know, when somebody gets their check that, you know, it's not certainly what it was. So that's certainly a great way to go. And when pairing food, you know, something middle of the road, something with great acidity, sparkling wine, you know, don't save it for your anniversary and for New Year's Eve. You know, sparkling wine goes great with anything, whether it's an expensive bottle of champagne or, you know, a $20 bottle of Prosecco.
Yeah.
Something that will go with a wide array of foods.
All right. We are joined by Kim Klopstock, Klopstock, Bruce Kazan, and Dominic Pernomo. It's a Vox Pop Food Friday. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. After the break, we're going to taste some food.
Support for WMP comes from Pangea, North Bennington, Vermont, catering Southern Vermont weddings and corporate events with menus designed for special occasions, vermontdining.com and Facebook. Curtis Lumber, supporting the Pet Connection and local animal rescues, helping to bring pets and people together, curtislumber.com. And Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing 24-hour emergency and critical care for dogs and cats every day, including all holidays, veshdeerfield.com.
It's Vox Pop Food Friday on WAMC. Boy, and what a generous cup of wine I was just handed. I have to drive this show, so just remember. We're joined by Bruce Kazan, Kim Klopstock, and Dominic Pernomo. It is our Food Friday today, focusing on catering. And well, I got to tell you, there is some food here in the studio. And Jessica Blaustein-Marshall, our producer, has just arrived, just in the nick of time, to try some of this food with us and some of this wine. I'm very excited. All right, who brought what?
Well, right here, and I brought these two dishes here. This right here is our Hudson Valley cured duck breast pastrami that I'm pairing with homemade polenta crackers, and this is a apple chow chow and a mustard seed caviar. It's meant to be able to be built up on top of each other, but you know what's kind of fun is using as many Hudson Valley products as we can and trying to find innovative ways of pulling it together. And this other dish I brought here also is a baby roasted beet salad with a beet dashi. Mm. Beet dashi has been kind of a fun experiment for chefs these days, because you're taking that fifth element called unami and you're kind of infusing it in different kinds of ingredients. Mm. And it's kind of been a lot of fun.
It's a nice attractive presentation.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. Yeah. Never had duck in my life, by the way.
Ooh.
You're gonna love it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Jessica. Boy, you know, you're a producer and you're on
server.
The wait staff, and it's great.
The idea, again, from our more standpoint, is what can we do with local products that we can keep our clients and our everybody turned on? And I think as the culinary innovations keeps expanding, especially the culinary techniques every year keep changing, right now we're all trying to figure out how to infuse molecular gastronomy into our everyday production, and it's working pretty well. Like this dashi sauce right here, I thickened it lightly with xanthan gum, which prevents it from discoloring the sauce itself, which is why I was able to get the clarity from it.
Ah.
But I was able to get the body that I wanted to achieve, so it kind of gave stability of all the foods that are on the plate.
How did you learn how to do this?
through a lot of research, there's been some really great books that have been coming out over the last 2 years. There's one that you can buy for $350. It's the modernistic culinary books. And a guy teaches you how you can employ these different techniques. And now, a lot of it's about trial and error.
Now, I seem to have food here, but everybody should have food, right? Doesn't everybody want some food?
Sure, of course.
Now, I don't mean to put too much pressure on Jessica Blaustein Marshall, but I'm hosting the show. Otherwise, I would gladly serve. Okay, so this, you said everything should be stacked up?
Yeah, the idea is that you take the polenta cracker and you're going to put the duck breast on top of that.
Okay.
And an apple chow chow is nothing more than taking good, fresh apples that we have from in our area, New Paltz, and we pickle them.
Okay.
And, you know, it's really a Louisiana or Southern-style idea of using chow chows, but it's kind of a nice... Pickles this year is the big in thing.
And, absolutely.
You know, pickled watermelon, pickled turnips, pickled everything.
Daikon.
Yes. You know, and this is a good way of taking local apples. It prevents them from oxidizing, and it gives a little bit of a nice twist to it.
So, Kim, you said, yes, absolutely, pickles are in. Do you confer with each other, or do you just both? Is it really the trend that people all of a sudden are into this stuff?
I wish Bruce were closer. It's such a treat to talk to somebody that has sort of been in the forefront of the farm-to-table movement down in his neck of the woods. That's somebody that's been very passionate and part of my life for, God, I hate to say it, but over 30 years.
Well, you're very young looking.
Thank you. Thank you. To that point, not young looking, but we brought in a smoker and have been playing with smoking ducks and cheeses. And
it's a lot of fun.
Oh, my God, it's so much fun. You know, we've been doing gravlax for years and doing some cold smoking of fish and things like that. But now my boys in the restaurant are doing pork belly like they can't even keep it.
Well, you know, it's these cheaper cuts of meat that now have been gaining a lot of popularity, either being short ribs or anything that could be braised meat, which adds on a new element to our menu development, because now we can take food items such as that and we can kind of employ different techniques for them to make it so we can keep them the same price points that people want.
But you can also give them a different... we did tongue. We've done tongue tacos. We've done all sorts of things.
Very Spanish, right?
Yeah, very, very, very. My stepmother is partially Venezuelan, and so she does a lot of work with the backstretch workers, and she, you know, has told me about some of the meals that they have back there, and that's great.
Well, it's been fun also. Like when we did this duck breast, there's an item that's out there called a smoking gun. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a little handheld unit. That has a barrel on the top that you put smoke chips into it, and it has a little tube that goes underneath, and you put your cover with saran wrap, and
Brilliant.
You light this.
Yeah.
So you can do quicks, even for homemakers, they can kind of smoke things really, really quickly.
But it can't be as good as long smoking, right?
That's not as good, but what we're trying to do is not, like, it's to impair the flavor. You're looking for flavor. You're not looking, you know, the infusions are enough to make it happen, where if you cure the meats the right way and you do the smoking, within 15 minutes, I can achieve what some people sometimes take hours to do.
Yeah.
Especially with fish or meats that are lighter in the muscle take.
Yeah.
You know, like a salmon or trout or something along those lines.
And we've taken, in the front of the house, a lot of things we always look for inspiration is in the kitchen. So at our restaurant, we do cocktails, and we actually use a smoking gun. You know, for a Bloody Mary, we'll smoke some, tomatoes, and then we'll add those, you know, in as a garnish. So the first thing you get is that aroma of smoked. Mm-hmm. We did a cocktail where we actually took that smoking gun, put the glass upside down over it, let the smoke get into the glass so it imparts those flavors, make, you know, a cocktail into that. We use, you know, tequila and mezcal, which is, you know, similar to tequila, but they smoke the agave first, so it gives you that smokiness. So, you know, the kitchen's not the only, you know, we come in, we borrow their toys all the time, and
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, it every year, Dominic, I don't know if you see the same thing. It's evolving. Like we're seeing, like for this year, even for like Sunday brunches at our weddings, people want to do champagne or Bloody Mary bars where you have all kinds of different kinds of juices and different kinds of ingredients. So people come up, I'll have that Bloody Mary with the tomato water, with the pickled celery, or with the caper berry. So there's different ways that your end of the business is also increasing what we do.
Absolutely. Mm.
Well, we are having, boy, I got to tell you, duck, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it the thumbs up. Bruce Kazan is here, Kim Klopstock, and Dominic Pernomo. It's a Food Friday on WAMC Vox Pop. Number to call is 800-348-2551. Dominic, what are we drinking here?
This is Matthias and Chardonnay. Okay. This comes to us from Napa Valley. These are 2012. Matheson, small producers. They're a group of a handful of, shall we say, young renegades Their preach is in pursuit of balance. It's all about balance. Through some of the 90s and the 2000s, some wines were just hugely over-oaked and too much fruit and too much manipulation. Mm-hmm. What they want to do is have a wine that's, you know, the fruit and the acidity and the balance, it's just like a perfect chord, no sharp notes, and just works seamlessly together. And I think that's what you get with
this. Is it steel fermented, or do you think barrel?
Stainless steel, maybe some older oak to it. But, you know, the oak doesn't overpower anything.
No, it's a really nice wine.
It tastes really cool.
And as we talked about, you know, with pairing wines, if you have too much oak in your wine, it overpowers the food, makes the food taste off. So again,
so
balance.
It can be done in steel.
Well, steel barrel fermented is what they most like is what this one is. And I think when Kim and I were speaking before, it's like when you're doing food at a wedding, sometimes you don't want the wine to be overcomplicated with that many like oak tones, because you don't want to mask what we're trying to do, and you don't want people sitting there kind of focusing on the wine as much.
Right.
So some of these kind of wines, which are excellent wines that are steel barrel fermented, are spot on, because it's not complicated. It's got a good body to it. Mm-hmm.
All right, we're having so much fun, I forgot to go to the phones. Let's go to Amy in Granville. Amy, you're on.
Hi, Kim, dear. It's Amy.
Amy, hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Fabulous. I'm hoping that you can share about gluten-free and your tabling and about cross-contamination, because you do a fabulous job.
Mm. Okay, so this is the goddess of gluten-free. Amy, you should tell about your blog, actually. She is actually the one that inspired me to turn my kitchens over to gluten-free.
Mm.
And so when we first started, it was a very small fryer, and we still were using flour and all sorts of things like that. And we have basically just cleaned out the whole kitchen. 99% of everything is gluten-free. Our fryers are gluten-free. Our homemade potato chips are done in the fryers, and they're all gluten-free. And I will tell you that I won't mention any names, but I know that there are some beer producers out there and beer reps that claim that certain beer is gluten-free.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that are just trying to stay away from wheat, that's not a big deal. But for people who really have celiac,
yep,
it can be disastrous.
And it's not true, is what you're saying?
Amy, you answer that. I always defer to her.
Okay.
Right, absolutely. Well, the problem is, if someone has celiac disease or a true allergy to gluten, then they really can't have the gluten. And like my husband is one of those people, and his tolerance level is about 5 parts per million. Now, there's a few different quote-unquote gluten-free beers offered on the market. Some are made from barley, and then they use an enzyme to supposedly take out most of the gluten.
I see.
But if you really need to be gluten-free, that can have a devastating effect. And you have to check the ingredient labels and words of warning on some of these things, like even some of the ciders, the hard ciders, are naturally gluten-free or gluten-free by nature. That may be true. You know, when apples grow on trees, they're absolutely gluten-free. When you take them into an environment that, say, has, you know, barley and hops and things like that in the room,
yeah,
and if it's on the same table and someone's just not careful, suddenly there's gluten now in that.
Can't you just wash the apples?
It's in the...
It's really difficult, actually.
Okay.
It's not just washing the apples. It's as if I have a client whose child is highly allergic to peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
So the chocolate that I have here is manufactured in a facility that has residual peanut dust.
Right, and you see that on labels all the time.
All the time. This child can't have it. The same thing, we're used to peanut allergies.
Mm-hmm.
Gluten is the next one. I'm sure you hear it all the time.
Well, the latest trend is either gluten-free or dairy-free, and we're trying to find other ways, and that's why we use a lot of amaranth, a lot of quinoa, a lot of different ingredients that we can employ to give, you know, starches. Yeah. As far as
challenge, though, isn't it?
It's not a challenge. It really is. If your repertoire on food is fairly vast, you know how you can manipulate this really, really well to make sure you accommodate everybody's dietary needs. Especially in the town of New Paltz that we're located in, it's a very well-educated community where people feel that they're food savvy. I've heard every allergy, I'm sure, is the same way you have, came over last year, and just try to figure out ways you can accommodate their needs. It's something we strive for, same way with dairy-free, with the popularity of almond milk and rice milk and things like that. You're not limited any longer in different kinds of desserts and different kinds of preparations that you can do. And by employing some of the molecular properties into this thing, you'll also be able to reach the different kinds of textures that you're trying to achieve. You know, it's all about the mouthfeel. If you're having a rice pudding and you want to get that richness, you can get that now by adding a little bit of xanthan gum to, say, an almond milk, and you're going to get that same texture that you're really trying to achieve.
Hmm.
So just a matter of kind of educating yourselves and what the consumers are wanting.
Well, I also think that we, by nature, I think by nature we use clean food.
Correct.
So I don't know about you, but I'm making all my own demi. I'm making all my own.
Correct. Root. Absolutely.
I do all
Absolutely.
Of that. So, and I also, not being professionally trained, you know, I have a little more of a organic style, so I don't necessarily need my lobster bisque to be that traditional French styled heavy lobster bisque where you're using a roux and you're using, or you're using cornstarch or something like that. So I'm also, my style is a little less, I'm not sure what the word is.
Well, no,
traditional,
I guess. But also I think, again, with the new culinary techniques that have been out there, either through reductions or using agar-agar or using the xanthan, you're achieving the same textures and the same profiles that you would normally use by using conventional French techniques.
Right.
And I think we're just employing them in different ways now. And I think that we're being very successful with it by trying to do what we consider to be traditional French techniques are now being employed by different modern ways.
Now, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Food Friday. Dominic Pernomo is here, Bruce Kazan and Kim Klopstock, and we're here to take your questions about catering and food in general. 800-348-2551. The wine, by the way, Dominic, very good.
Thank you.
Very nice. Why am I the only one drinking it?
My glass is empty.
Oh.
Here, let me fill it.
You are a professional. Well done. All right, now I see some dessert of some kind here. What is this?
Yeah, that is our espresso bomb. So it's made with espresso, eggs, butter, a little bit of sugar, and chocolate.
Yeah? Here, you get the first bite. Producer gets first bite. Go ahead.
It's usually served with, I do a lot of flowers with my food, so either a candied rose petal, or you can serve it with whipped cream, or you can serve it with a candied violet, or you can serve it with julienne, rose petals or something like that. It's just really clean, simple, decadent.
Yeah. We're going to stop the show now because I'm going to eat this for the rest of the time. That is amazing.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Delicious. Lily and the Rose is one of your venues. 50 South is the other one. And Lily and the Rose has catered a day of the fun drive, the last several fun drives. And it's always an exciting afternoon. And sometimes I'm supposed to leave early and I stick around.
I'm going to make sure there's duck this time.
Oh, really? I got to say, the only duck I was familiar with was in the Christmas Story movie. And this is delicious.
Yeah.
So pretty good. Let's go to the phones. Barry in Catskill. Barry, you're up.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I had a couple questions, but one regarding to wine lists. I'm just curious how a restaurant with a large wine list balances being able to offer an extensive wine list with actually keeping product in stock that sells, that turns around fast enough.
Dominic?
My other question was just in regards to peanuts and what steps, if any, are your guests taking, and do they take as big a step to ensure safety with peanut allergies as they do with gluten?
Okay.
I'll field the wine question. Certainly with the wine program, in especially a large one, we have in Yonos, we have about 1,000 wines on our wine list. So it's definitely a big balancing act. And we certainly... We buy the wine and we offer it to sell it. It's certainly nice to have some, certainly some old Bordeaux or some big Super Tuscans or Burgundies that sit on your list, to sort of pretty up the list, so to speak. But, our overall goal is to sell those wines. So, the thing is managing your inventory. I mean, there's wines that we bring in 5-6 cases at a clip, and there's wines that we bring in 2 bottles at a time. So it's certainly knowing, first thing is making sure that the wine goes with the food.
Yeah.
And that's our first goal when writing a wine list. Second off is, making sure that there's wines that the guests want to drink. No matter how geeky and eclectic you want to get with your wine list, if there's no comfort level for the guest, then they're going to be uncomfortable there. And the other thing is training the staff and making sure that they're aware of the wines and what to look for. And certainly, I'm at the restaurant every night, so I'm certainly more than happy to assist guests with their wine questions. We have a budget every month of what we spend on wine and how much we want to hold in inventory. And occasionally, my my accountant is not happy with me, but for the most part, you know, I try to stay in line.
So if you find a wine that you love, this is your favorite wine in the world, and it doesn't sell, off it goes, off that list?
No, I mean, you know, that's my job is to make, if there's a wine that I'm certainly that passionate about, you know, that passion's contagious.
Yeah.
You know, not just in food and wine, but I mean, certainly with anything. So I think, you know, I'm going to get excited about that. And let's say, you know, if it's something that's sitting there for a while, I'll open the bottle and I'll pour a taste and say, you know, give it a try. If you like it as much as I think you will, you know, you'll buy a bottle. If not, you know, on to the next one.
All right, let's get to Barry's second question regarding peanut allergies. Panel?
Do you want to go or do you want me to?
Do we need to reiterate the question?
Well, no. I mean, in any operation right now, peanuts are the last things you want to bring into your shop anyway, since there's been so much concern regarding it.
Right.
But, you know, that whole thing, is it a nut, is it a legume, you know, what is it? And so it has a much broader, you know, response than that. In our shop alone right now, we know we don't carry peanuts any longer because it's become a real kind of like hot button issue. So in our preparations, we try to stay away from it. In place, we'll use things like tahini, or we'll use other things that we can puree and get the same kind of results out of.
Barry?
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Yeah, that helps.
Okay. Barry, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. Let's take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 on this Food Friday. We'll be back with more of your questions and comments coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Lori Stillwell, CPA, PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond, stillwellcpa.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond, 518-580-8080. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com.
Vox Pop, it's Food Friday on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call if you have a question. Mm-hmm. Our guests today, Dominic Pernomo, Bruce Kazan, and Kim Klopstock, and we've been talking about all sorts of things, catering and wine and picking the right drink and putting herbs in cocktails and strange things. We've had some delicious food here today. And you asked a question about wine just now, Bruce.
Well, I was trying to get from Dominic, like in our market, we are all about sustainability. And sustainability to me is, you know, not just in the food itself, but it's in supporting all of our merchants in our area. Where right now we've been very, very fortunate that we have, in New Paltz alone, 5 different independent wineries. Plus we also have Tuttle House Distilleries. And in fact, we were down in the city the other day and they were bringing water from Rosendale down to New York City to produce bourbon in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole idea is taking on a whole new meaning. And I was just trying to ask Dominic if he felt that there were some Hudson Valley wines in his own inventory that he thought were kind of special.
Sure. You know, actually, on our wine list, we have, on the Yonos wine list, we have we have an entire page devoted to New York State wines, you know, some from the Hudson Valley as well. And I think that's, you know, the New York wine growing as a whole is very young still. Obviously, you know, in Europe, they've been doing it for hundreds of years. On the West Coast, you know, a little over 100. You know, locally here, I mean, there's a few that have been around. You know, I know there's, you know, Brotherhood that claims to be the oldest in the country. And but I think
that's the spiced wine down there.
Yeah.
They do more than just that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they're known for.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think everybody's still trying. I mean, because as a whole, I said, they're still trying to find out. We're still learning about the terroir, still learning about the earth, what grapes grow best in this climate, in, you know, with this.
Well, there are different climates in New York too.
Exactly.
I mean, you go out west, you go down to the island,
yep.
And there are different. I mean, they've been growing grapes out in the western part of New York for a long, long time.
Sure.
I don't know how the wine has been.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's
their dry Riesling actually isn't that bad.
It's
really nice.
Finger Lakes,
some of the best. I mean, some, you know, American Finger Lakes Rieslings do extremely well in international tastings. I mean, Millbrook, which is, you know, a wine that we love right down in the Hudson Valley, we have some of those wines. And I've been really pleased to see be in other markets in Chicago and New York and San Francisco and I've seen Millbrook, the Tokaj Frulano on wine lists.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Which is, again, a great food wine. Talk about incredible
easy
balance.
Easy eating.
Yep, goes with a lot of great foods. So, you know, I, for me, when I see that, it's like, you know, I feel great about, you know, the home team, you know, doing well.
And then more and more each year, there are more and more small husband-wife vintners that are, like, there's a White Cliff that's actually in Gardner, New York. And they are extraordinarily passionate about the wines that they produce. Where, I mean, I've seen the guy out there with his own little torch, you know, charring his barrels to achieve the right flavors that he wants. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of pairing up with the guy who owns the Tuttle House Distilleries. So they're swapping barrels back and forth to achieve the different kinds of tones that they want to get from it. That's some pretty cool stuff that's happening.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, just there's another one, Hill Rock Distillery, which is in Ancrum, New York, which is not far, probably kind of halfway between us in where you are. And again, they're doing these incredible small batch bourbons and whiskeys and single malt whiskeys. And, you know, they're
how do they stack up?
The Hill Rock, it's a Solera system. So it's where every year they add a little bit of the current vintage to last year's. So what that achieves is over a long period of time, you have a consistent product year in and year out, which is sort of adapted from what they do with sherry wine over in Spain. But you know, these wines, or I'm sorry, these bourbons and whiskeys that they're making are incredible. You know, right here in Albany, we have Albany Distilling Company, and they do a rye, they do a white whiskey, they do a bourbon, they do a rum.
I think any of these artisanal producers are going to be better than the mass producers, no matter what. And I think there's always going to be more change, which is kind of fun for us, especially in the catering business. I mean, I think this is kind of like the best time in our lives to be in the food business in the Hudson Valley, because there are all these great producers and all these guys. You know, we've always wanted to be the East Coast Napa Valley, and we are achieving it finally because of all of these great producers, and we can turn all of our clients on with this.
Well, I love the Adirondack, Lake Placid vodka. It's a it's a potato that's locally grown and locally distilled. They're wonderful. You know,
so, I mean, so this is that's what
it's
I'm saying.
Fun.
It's a lot of fun,
and they do a great their Blue Line gin, which is wonderful as
Okay, now I'm a gin snob. Is it classic gin? Is it too foofy?
It's not. I wouldn't say foofy. It's not going to be your traditional English style. I'm going to say it's probably a little more New World style, but I mean, it's not, it's gin. I mean, there's no mistaking, you know, some of these gins these days could pass for vodka.
Oh.
You know?
What's that gin, the apple gin with the brown label? I carry it at my
I've
bar.
Had
and
it.
I don't, oh my God.
And it's wonderful
like
stuff,
it?
Except it's tough to make a martini. I'll drink martinis, and it's tough to make a kind of a classic martini with it. It's wonderful on its own and in other drinks. Tough to make a martini with it.
Okay.
What are we drinking here, Dominic?
Next up, we have from Turley in Lodi, California. This is a Sanso, and it's a classic Rhone varietal, usually used for blending. You know, you don't often see it on its own, let alone from California on its own. And this is a single vineyard, Bechtold Vineyard. Sanso, medium to light-bodied wine. Mm. Again, very little oak influence, really clean. You get that fruit up front, a little bit of acidity. Pairs great with wine. This will go lovely with that, you know, with the smoked duck. Because again, we talked about, you know, when a lot of wines tend to be overly oaked, that certainly.
What price points do you sell for in the shop?
So this is something.
Give us a rough estimate. We don't really do prices
if you
here.
If you were to get this in a wine shop, you're probably looking somewhere.
No, I mean your restaurant. In your.
Oh, something this we would sell in a wine list for probably, you know, $36. That we would sell for.
Very reasonable.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones. Colin in Glens Falls. Colin, you're on.
Hi. Kim, I've been to your restaurant a few times. I love your burgers.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you can talk about the ingredients you use for that.
Sure. It's really easy. I have two friends. Oh, I'm sorry. I have two friends who are retired. One's an orthopedic surgeon, and his wife is a daylily specialist, and they have a farm called Long Lesson Farm, and that's where we get our beef from. So other than the... Love Dust, that is what we, it's a mix that I made that has some secret ingredients
okay,
in
yeah,
it.
Okay, yeah, don't tell us the Love Dust.
It's very simple. That's all we use. So, and then it's broiled, and served on a Nino's Bakery. We use their buns. We use a lot of, you know, as you know, local farmers, and so my style is keep it very simple, let this food speak for itself, and don't overcook it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. All right.
Good advice. Hey, thanks a lot for the call.
Did I tell him the name?
Yep. What?
Did I tell him the name of the farm? Long Lesson. I just want to make sure that I said it. Yeah, sorry.
Thank you, Kim.
Yeah, thank you.
Colin, thank you for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Joe in Burlington. Joe, you're on.
Hi. I was listening to your program, and it sounds like your guests have extensive knowledge in catering. And I was wondering whether they have perhaps a suggested menu of their favorite dishes that they could serve at a summer wedding for about 150 people. I'm trying to get a sense of cost, too, per setting. And I was wondering whether they could provide that information.
It might put them in a tough situation.
Meat, fish, or fowl.
You're right.
Give me a protein that you're trying to that turns you guys on.
The type of menu?
No, yeah. You want chicken? You want what kind of protein?
Yeah, poultry would be nice, and fresh some type of accompany vegetables or salads to accompany that, and some light drinks. That would go with that menu and the dessert.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't know how Kim does it, but we also do it. But, you know, what time of year are you going to get married in? If it's going to be the middle of summer?
It'll be the summer.
You know, we like doing things with, you know, what's in season during the summer. You got fresh corn, you got your fresh squashes. I like employing pea leaves, which is kind of a fun item in everything
pea
that
leaves?
We do. Pea leaves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pea leaves taste like a pea, and it's much easier to eat and less of a hassle.
Oh.
But, you know, a lot of times we'll pair like a nice roasted like organic chicken breast. We might do what we call Hudson Valley succotash, where I'll take fresh sharp corn that's picked that morning with pine island potatoes and maybe some fresh peas and make a nice medley of that and put the chicken on top of that with maybe some kind of nage, which is just a puree of whatever ingredient you want to make with. So there's a lot of different ways you can employ foods. And as far as price range, oh, my God, it's all over the map.
I think. And you'd have to search around in Burlington, Vermont. I'm sure there are several great companies up that way. And thank you very much for the call, Joe. We appreciate it. Let's go to John in Boston Spa. John, you're on.
Hi, how are you? My daughter and her longtime boyfriend finally got engaged over the holidays.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. She is saying she does not want a typical ballroom wedding. She's been looking at barns and estates in the lower Hudson Valley, the New Paltz area, word to Rhinebeck. And it's overwhelmed the wife, obviously. And I'm hoping that Bruce can provide some insight on how to streamline the process for us, how a caterer would help do that.
Well, in our portfolio, we ask our clients, do you want to see in the background? You want to see a farm field? You want to see some water? You want to see some mountains? And then we will give you different kind of venues that you can then go start searching for. In the Mid-Hudson Valley area, the big thing right now are barn locations. Mm-hmm. The bigger the better. It's been a lot of fun for us trying to take these really rustic barns and try to make it come out to be one that you want to have your daughter's wedding in.
Hmm.
The fun that has been out there is that there are really great designers on our staff that help us pull this together.
So in your line of work, it's not just the food. You'll take care of all the decor and everything else?
We are a full-service caterer,
wow,
which means that we do design. We will turn you on to people who can bring you in chandeliers, bring you in antique farm props, antique tables, whatever you want. We help coordinate all aspects of that part of it,
wow,
which is great. So couples come to us with a vision, and we put it all together for them so they could be a one-stop shop.
Yeah, same here.
John, what do you think?
Great. That's really simple. That's really super.
Well,
that's been helpful.
The best thing
Bruce and Kim. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the best thing, hon, for you to do is to go to everybody's website and to look at or to Google historic barns. There's a great place. It's not in the Hudson Valley, but it's been one of the meticulous renovations that I've ever seen. It's the Historic Barns of Nipmoose, Nipmoose. I love it. I love the people that renovated it. I love their idea of sensibility, restoration, and like Bruce said, you know, we both have teams of people that we love to work with. And one of the things that I love about Dominic is that it's a family business, and that when you go to him, and it seems like when you go to both of us, you're not going to get a sales pitch. We're owners, we're chefs, we're sommeliers, we're people who love what we do. I don't know about Bruce, but I don't oftentimes have too many people that I don't want to work for. But, you know, it's definitely a fit factor. And the more that you can share with the people that you're interested in working with, the better it is. Because they're going to tell you from their heart and from their experience. And that, when your daughter or son is getting married, you know, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of emotional stuff goes on at that time, because you're melding oftentimes two different families, different economics, different ethnic backgrounds, different educational backgrounds, and ages from 90 to, you know, babies. So it's a different animal than a more industrial sort of a corporate event. And what I like about these two men is that they have a heart, and that, you know, they are working owners. And so when you talk to them, they're going to tell you what their experience is and what they know to be true, rather than if you go to a very big commercial company. And not that there's something wrong with that either, but, you know, there tends to be more of a sales pitch kind of thing. And I don't know about you, but when my daughter got married, it was important for me to... Sorry.
You need to take another call, John?
No.
Well, anyway,
sitting in the office. Anyway, both of you guys have been really helpful. I appreciate it.
Good luck.
Much.
Yeah,
thank
good
you.
Luck.
Thank you.
Kim, that was very well put. Let's go over to Judith in Springfield. Judith, you're on.
Hello? Did you say Ginger?
Judith, are you Ginger?
I'm Ginger.
Okay, Ginger, it says Judith, but I'll call you Ginger.
Okay. I've had people cater parties for me, and one of the main questions they ask me is how much food I want for the number of guests I'm having.
I never know how much I want, and I often
end up with way too much food.
You're not hiring the right caterer.
Right, yeah. You're not the expert. We're supposed to be guiding you.
No, yes. You get the number of people you're having. We just bring what you need to make sure the event's successful.
Yeah, that's right. Our job, to have as much food and make sure that you don't run out.
Right. That's exactly.
Okay.
So hire one of us next time.
Yeah. Well, that didn't mean to be disrespectful to the people that you've been working with, but, you know, oftentimes, you know, our styles tend to be a little different, so.
Okay.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Ginger. We appreciate it, or Judith, or whatever your real name is. I appreciate the call.
It's Ginger. Thanks for your help.
Thanks, Ginger. Bye. Here's one for Dominic. A question, I believe it comes via the email. Everyone seems to have ratings on wines. Which magazine ratings reviews are the best? What are your thoughts on the website Wines Till Sold Out from Joanne?
Great questions. I have a huge problem with the 100-point score.
Okay.
Those are very, very subjective.
Is there payola involved?
Yeah. and it winds up, you know, it's one person's opinion. There was a trade magazine that I used to write wine reviews for, and you know, we didn't whittle it down to a number, and again, you know, I'm not a huge fan of that. So, I mean, I let the wine speak for itself. And certainly, at least when you're trying to get into it and get comfortable with it, I could certainly see how that would work. You know, these days, you know, the wines that tend to get the higher, you know, points, the 98, 99, 100 point wines tend to be big, fruit, overly oaked. Because when you're tasting 40...
You're against oak, aren't you?
Well,
that seems to be a theme here in this program.
Yes and no. Because, I mean, it creates these big, you know, bolding wines that can, you know, they're great on their own, but you know you have it with some great food like this, and you don't taste the food, you just taste all this fruit and this oak. And that, you know, that 100 point score, you know, to me is flawed, because it doesn't give you too much information about the wine. You know, those wines tend to be brooding, and when you're tasting 50 or 60 wines at a clip, you know, those big wines are going to be the ones that stand out to the person reviewing them. So I mean, having said that, you know, probably if I were to follow one, maybe Steven Tanzer would be one to follow. You know, but, you know, the thing is get out there and try those wines. You know, a lot of times on, you know, you see these shelf talkers in a store or on a restaurant wine list, it says, you know, this wine's 93 points. Well, if you're going to live by the sword, you should die by the sword. And if this wine is only 85 points, how dare you serve me this? And if this doesn't have any points next to it, why would you even put it on your list? So it's one of those things where I don't personally get into the list too much, but, you know, if you want to use that as a medium,
yeah,
you know, I'd say probably Tanzer is probably your
but
best
customers
bet.
Do though, don't you think, Kim? Like, when customers come for tastings at our shop and they want to know what kind of wines are on our list, they're using that score as a judgment of how the wine pairs with other wines. So it's sometimes it's hard to get away from it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if a wine is 95, it's probably pretty good.
To somebody, to other people, it may be completely, it may be too much.
So have you had a wine that's 95 that you said, oh, God, this is a 50?
Or I've had wines that have gotten 85 points, which is technically low because it seems like everything these days is 90 points or above.
Yeah, depending on the advertising.
And you have this wine, you say, this wine yeah. This wine is incredible. And allegedly, it got 79 points from, you know, one of the powers that be that does it. But, I mean, it's, you know, it's like chicken. You know, you don't say, how many points does this chicken get? You just, you know, you taste the chicken and, okay, this chicken tastes good or
not. Wine is a matter of taste. Yeah. You know, well, you had people's taste buds are different.
Well, you know what? Yeah. We're out of time. This was a fun little party. Thank you very much to Kim Klopstock, Bruce Kazan, and Dominic Pernoma for being with us today. Thank you for listening. And we appreciate everybody who called in for recipes of some of the foods you've heard about today and some of Dominic's expert wine tips. Visit WAMC.org. You just punch in Food Friday in the search box and you'll come to a page with many delicious things. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Many people answered the phones today. And I'm Ray Graff. Thanks for being with us. Next week, we start off with Medical Monday. Stay tuned now for a news update.